You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. Just ahead, Saudi Arabia explains why it is ending a campaign of airstrikes on Houthi rebels in Yemen. We'll find out how China and South Korea reacted to Japan's leader sending an offering to a controversial war shrine. And we'll look at a new survey of the 10 most restrictive nations for international media. I'm Michael Lippin. Saudi Arabia says it is ending a campaign of airstrikes by Sunni Gulf nations on Shiite Houthi rebels in Yemen. After 4 weeks of Saudi-led bombings on Houthi targets across Yemen, Saudi officials said Tuesday the rebels no longer pose a threat to Yemeni civilians or neighboring countries, including Saudi Arabia. They said coalition efforts to help Yemen's internationally recognized government to fully restore its power will enter a new phase, focusing on the political process and helping civilians. But Saudi officials also warned that coalition airstrikes could resume at any moment to prevent Houthi militias from moving around Yemen. While Iran welcomed the Saudi announcement of an end to airstrikes as a step forward toward a political settlement, Tehran's critics have accused it of providing weapons to the Houthis. Reports from the Somali capital Mogadishu say a car bomb has exploded outside a popular restaurant in the city, killing at least 7 people. The Reuters news agency quotes a spokesman for Al-Shabaab as saying the militant group was behind Tuesday's lunchtime attack. At least 8 other people were wounded in the blast, which targeted the Banoda restaurant, a spot popular with Somali civil servants and employees at the presidential palace. It was Al-Shabaab's 4th deadly attack in Somalia in as many days. An Egyptian court has sentenced the country's former president, Mohamed Morsi, to 20 years in prison in connection with the deaths of protesters in 2012. In a Tuesday ruling, the court found Mr. Morsi and 12 other members of the Muslim Brotherhood guilty of intimidation and violence, but not murder, meaning the former president escaped a possible death penalty. The charges are related to a 2012 incident in which Mr. Morsi's Islamist supporters attacked anti-Brotherhood activists who were protesting Mr. Morsi's decree declaring that his decisions could not be challenged by the courts. At least 10 people were killed in the ensuing violence. While rights group Amnesty International denounced the sentencing of Mr. Morsi, Egypt's first democratically elected leader, as a travesty of justice. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has made a ritual offering to a controversial shrine honoring the country's war dead. Tuesday's offering sparked a sharp response from China and South Korea, two nations occupied by Japan in the 20th century. VOA's Bill Ide has more from Beijing.
The Yasukuni Shrine for Japan's war dead includes those convicted as war criminals in the wake of World War II. Personal visits in the past have sparked outrage from Japan's neighbors, but the decision by Prime Minister Abe to stave off a visit and instead send a potted tree as a religious gift was still seen as an irritation. South Korean Foreign Ministry spokesman No Kwang Il said Japanese political leaders should clearly understand that paying their appreciation and respect towards the Yasukuni Shrine is perceived as violating international agreements and harming international stability. China's Foreign Ministry spokesman Hong Lei said China's position on the shrine is clear and consistent. Hong said Prime Minister Abe must earnestly abide by the relevant promises of past cabinets to face up to and reflect on the history of aggression. Prime Minister Abe had been expected to meet with his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping on the sidelines of this week's Asia-Africa summit in Indonesia. How much of an impact the offering might have on the proposed meeting is unclear. Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
Italian prosecutors say the Tunisian captain of a migrant boat that capsized in the Mediterranean over the weekend mistakenly rammed his vessel into a merchant ship coming to its rescue. The prosecutors said Tuesday the captain steered his dangerously overloaded boat into the Portuguese container ship, causing the boat to capsize off the coast of Libya and drowning hundreds of migrants seeking a better life in Europe. The prosecutors absolved the merchant ship of any responsibility for the tragedy. There were only 28 survivors rescued in what European authorities fear could become the Mediterranean's deadliest migrant disaster. A new survey of global public opinion has found that Russia has earned the lowest approval ratings of all major world powers for the 8th year in a row. The Gallup survey of people in more than 130 countries published on Tuesday showed that Moscow's ranking fell sharply in Western nations after the Russian intervention last year in Ukraine. The survey of about 1,000 adults also showed the United States with the highest ratings, followed by Germany, the European Union, China, and then Russia. The international pollster said the results were similar to those recorded for the last 6 years. The Committee to Protect Journalists has listed the 10 countries where the news media are the most restricted. Led by Eritrea and North Korea, the CPJ report released on Tuesday says these countries harass and imprison journalists, as well as censor the internet to keep reporters quiet. VOA's Daniela Schreier has the details.
Being jailed is what happens to journalists in the 10 countries cited in the CPJ report. China is the report's leading jailer, with 44 journalists behind bars. And the CPJ cites Iran as using mass and arbitrary detention to silence dissent or force exile. With 200 journalists worldwide jailed this year alone, Courtney Ratch of CPJ says it's a perilous time to report.
The past 3 years have been the most dangerous on record for journalists, with record numbers of killings, of imprisonment, and based on CPJ's assistance data, more than 400 journalists who have been forced into exile over the past 5 years.
Internet censorship is a key weapon to stifle criticism. In North Korea, only the political elite have access. In Cuba, bloggers must upload from foreign embassies or hotels to get an unfiltered connection. China's 642 million internet users face what's called the Great Firewall, which blocks dissenting sites and social media. Ratch says the report's publication lets journalists and citizens in these countries know the world is watching and cares. Daniela Schreier, VOA News, New York.
And before we go, the U.S. Justice Department says it is investigating the death of an African-American man who died after suffering spinal injuries while in police custody in the eastern U.S. city of Baltimore. The investigation will look for civil rights violations in the case of Freddie Gray, who was arrested on April 12th. Well, that's it for International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Michael Lippin. If you'd like to reach me on Twitter, I'm at Michael_Lippin, spelled L-I-P-I-N.
I'm Jim Stevenson with Business News on VOA Global. U.S. stocks were a mixed bag Tuesday, with the Dow ending lower after a handful of uninspiring earnings reports, while the Nasdaq closed near a record high following a proposed biotech merger. Travelers, DuPont, and IBM shares weighed on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. DuPont reported lower sales in all of its businesses and said a strong dollar would take a toll on its full-year earnings. IBM also mentioned currency effects when it reported a fall in revenue late Monday. The dollar has gained almost 9% since the beginning of the year against a basket of major currencies, and that's hurting companies with large overseas operations. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 85 points to finish at 17,949. The S&P 500 shedding 3 points to sit at 20,097. And the Nasdaq Composite added 19 points to close at 50,014. Mexico has become the most attractive place in North America to build new automobile factories, a shift that has siphoned jobs from the United States and Canada, yet helped to keep car and truck prices in check for consumers. In the past 2 years, 8 automakers have opened or announced new plants or expansions in Mexico. Just last week, Toyota announced a new plant to build a popular Corolla. And now, with work done in Canada, Ford unveiled plans for Mexican engine and transmission factories. Low labor costs and fewer tariffs are also the swing factors, and Mexico trumps the United States on free trade. It has agreements with 45 countries, meaning low tariffs for exporting globally. Greek local authorities were on the brink of revolt Tuesday against the central government's move to use cash reserves from state agencies, including hospitals and kindergartens, to help the country make ends meet. That's a look at business news from VOA. Diabetes seems to be affecting an ever-growing number of people here in the United States, elsewhere in the world as well. On today's edition of Now, David Byrd takes us to Sweden, where a new study sheds new hope and opportunities for treatment. But first, in the American Cafe with Ira Melman, we hear about advancements in cancer research and treatment, which have made great strides in recent years, and there's more to report on, as we hear right now.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Scientists and educators in the United States and China say it pays to introduce very young children to new technologies, from computer programming to designing electronic circuits. With the right approach, they say, children learn not to be intimidated by abstract thinking. VOA's George Pootich is in the cafe with the story.
And now you can paint your back.
Even before they learn to read and write, children can manipulate images. Tablet computers with touch-sensitive screens are ideal for lining up simple commands, which is exactly what programming is all about, says Mitchell Resnick, co-developer of a code learning program called Scratch Junior.
Each block tells the characters what to do. You snap the blocks together, and you've made a computer program.
7-year-old Talia Levitt is having a good time.
It's pretty fun because you can do like almost anything on it.
Yeah. It is up to parents to decide how much time their children spend exposed to modern technology. But as Sandra Calvert, director of Children's Digital Media Center at Georgetown University, notes, it's all around us.
We live in the digital age, and just as it's a worry that there may be too much screen time, there's also a concern that our children will be left behind if they don't know how to use the technologies that are going to shape 21st century careers, jobs, and how we are going to succeed as a nation.
At so-called maker spaces in Beijing, children between 4 and 15 also use tools and machines such as 3D printers to create various projects. They are part of the so-called maker movement that started in the U.S. but quickly spread to other countries, connecting people who like to make things with their hands. One of the movement's pioneers, Wang Shenglin, says that trend appeals to the younger generation.
The old generation is like, oh, we go to work, but the young generation, we see them, they start trying. They're trying so hard, actually, to do what they love. And that's the difference.
It goes against tradition in China not to follow the crowd. But young entrepreneurs like 24-year-old Huang Weiji want to change things.
Our generation thinks that we really need to do something we like in order to innovate. To us, we are as capable as foreigners. Why can they do something and we cannot?
Huang says Chinese will have to learn that although opening a private business includes the possibility of failure, his generation will have wider experience of the world, so they will be prepared to make mistakes and learn from them. George Pootich, VOA News, Washington.
There is a new way of killing certain cancer tumors that allow the patient to go home on the same day. Surgeons at the Keck Medical Center of the University of Southern California became the first doctors to use this procedure on a patient with the help of high-intensity focused ultrasound, or HIFU, and new robotic technology. Elizabeth Lee reports from Los Angeles.
Dr. Inderbir Gill says the process starts with an incision about a centimeter wide. A robotic device then gets into the abdomen, finds the tumor, and kills it.
So that's what's exciting about the case today is that, to our knowledge, for the first time, a kidney tumor has been ablated using high-intensity focused ultrasound as monotherapy without any additional treatment. And allowing us to do this cuts down on the operative time, decreases the blood loss, decreases the chances of complications, preserves kidney function while killing the tumor, and allows the patient to go home the same day.
Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Come on in and sit a spell every day at voanews.com.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Diabetes affects about 26 million people in the United States. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that by 2050, one in three Americans could have the disease. Of those with diabetes, about 5% have so-called type 1 or juvenile diabetes. The autoimmune disease often appears in early childhood and causes the pancreas not to produce enough insulin to control blood sugar. The consequences can be devastating. But now, through a joint study involving universities in Sweden, Germany, Finland, and the United States, researchers have come up with a new way of looking at the blood that makes it possible to detect the disease and start treatment earlier. Uka Lernmark is a lead researcher at Sweden's Lund University. He is also part of the so-called TEDI program. TEDI stands for the Environmental Determinants of Diabetes in the Young.
So the TEDI study has discovered that the appearance of autoantibodies against the insulin-producing cells appear during the first years of life. But the disease is not diagnosed until some 10 years later.
Lernmark says that the study gives scientists the ability to look for what triggers diabetes and speeds up the time to diagnose the disease.
We now know where to look for the trigger. So we have to explain why these autoantibodies develop. And now we know that we should look during the first years of life.
The TEDI study was funded by the U.S. National Institutes of Health. It involved 8,600 children who have an increased hereditary risk of type 1 diabetes. The study has revealed triggers in children at a much earlier age than was possible before. Lernmark says that he would like to test all Swedish children at age 4.
For the first time, it will allow the researchers to look, to study the mechanisms that trigger this disease, because in the past we didn't know when to look.
The discovery could help doctors treat children earlier and use lower doses of insulin. It could even help patients to postpone or avoid symptoms as the disease develops. Fredrik Niklasson has a son and two daughters who have been part of the TEDI study in Sweden. He keeps regular and detailed diaries of what his kids eat, and they have to give blood and other body tissue samples. But Niklasson says they don't mind the regular checks because it doesn't feel much like a hospital visit.
Well, I think they think it's quite fun most of the time, because it also involves some blood sampling. But in our family, that's been not a big issue.
Doctors still don't know what triggers the immune system to start attacking the pancreas's insulin-producing cells. Lernmark says that one theory is a viral infection. He says his hope is that a vaccine could be developed that would stop the original problem before the immune system kicks in.
So let's assume or hypothesize that there is a virus being responsible to trigger these islet autoantibodies. The goal is, of course, then to make a vaccine against that virus. And if that would be the discovery, then the chances to prevent type 1 diabetes altogether is very high.
To learn more about the TEDI study, log on to www.teddy, that's T-E-D-D-Y, .epi.usf.edu. And let us know your opinion on this story or anything you hear on our program by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And you can email us at voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Berg. An Ohio State House banner marking the 150th anniversary of Abraham Lincoln's death misquotes him. It says, "With malice to no one, with charity for all." Lincoln, in his second inaugural address, actually said, "With malice toward none, with charity for all." The mistake was intentional. Officials wanted the banner to be historically faithful to the one that was hung in 1865 that also misquoted Lincoln, as scores of people came to the State House to pay their respects to the slain president. It's time for sports on the Voice of America. I'm Jim Stevenson. After leading the Atlanta Hawks to the top seed in the Eastern Conference of the National Basketball Association playoffs and coming off of a tumultuous summer, Mike Budenholzer has beaten out Golden State's Steve Kerr for NBA Coach of the Year. Budenholzer is in his second year as head coach. He was honored after the Hawks went 60-22 during the regular season. That's the best mark in franchise history. They won their first division title since 1994, which was also the last time they held a number one seed in the playoffs. Budenholzer received 67 first place votes and 513 points overall in national balloting by sports writers and broadcasters. Kerr guided the Warriors to an NBA best 67 wins against 15 losses. In his first season as coach, he received 56 first place votes and 471 points, both pretty darn good team leaders. Cincinnati Reds manager Brian Price is a team leader, but he had a few choice words for reporters, and now he has apologized for using profanity during a pregame meeting with those reporters, but he says he stands by his message that the media should not report developments that he feels would put his team at a competitive disadvantage. Price had a profanity-filled monologue before a 6-1 victory over the Brewers on Monday. The struggling Reds had been swept in St. Louis just before that. Through the team's Twitter account on Tuesday, Price said his language was wholly inappropriate. He only cursed 77 times during that tirade, but he says he was not backing away from the intent of his message. Former Navy man Mitch Harris has made it to the major leagues in baseball, ready to join the St. Louis Cardinals bullpen. The 29-year-old pitcher is a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy. The Hall of Fame says it believes the only Naval Academy graduate to appear in the major leagues was pitcher Nemo Gaines. That was all the way back in 1921 for the Washington Senators. Harris is a 2008 Naval Academy graduate who had the rank of second lieutenant. He was selected by the Cardinals on the 13th round of the 2008 amateur draft and started his professional career in baseball in 2013. Good luck. That's a look at sports. I'm Jim Stevenson.
Whether it's superstar Ariana Grande or an older rocker like former Beatle Ringo Starr or the country western hit band Lady Antebellum, being out on tour is how you pay the bills. And venues are popping worldwide right now with numerous artists on the road making money. There was a time when musical artists made their money from album sales and they toured largely to promote those albums. Well, that's all shifted since the advent of music downloads, which provide smaller amounts of income for the artist. Now it's the tour that counts, like Grande's current sold-out performances all over the world. At 21, Ariana Grande, who got her start on Broadway and TV's Nickelodeon, is just about as hot as a hit artist can be. Remember the Beatles drummer Ringo Starr?
What's my name?
Just in case anybody forgot.
Well, at 74, Ringo's out on the road singing new songs and, of course, some old favorites like It Don't Come Easy. Like other legends of music, Ringo Starr stays ever so busy out on the road performing before packed houses. In the world of country western music, no band has Lady Antebellum beat.
Spinning faster until a new disaster. So higher unto you, higher unto you, baby. When it all starts coming undone, baby, you're the only one I run to. I run to you.
Antebellum got started in the capital of country music, Nashville, in 2006. And like Ariana Grande and Ringo Starr, they have tons of music industry awards on top of an already very excited bunch of fans who follow them out on the road on tour. That's music on VOA Global. I'm Steve Norman.
Well, through the ages, so many things that have happened in New York City for the very first time have gone on to become, well, a normal part of life in the rest of the world, and this may, do the same. A judge in Manhattan is granting a woman permission to serve her husband divorce papers through a Facebook message. New York State Supreme Court Justice Matthew Cooper is agreeing to the move because the plaintiff, Eleanor Arthur Baidu, is not able to reach her husband, Victor Sena Bludrasekou, via typical legal methods. Yahoo's finances Aaron Task says he believes the idea that a judge would actually allow this points to how important social media has now become. He says it goes to show Facebook is the public square now. The New York Daily News reports they hired a private detective to try to find this guy, and the only place they could find him was on Facebook. He says that's pretty powerful, and the judge apparently recognized that in his ruling as well. Task goes on to say in this age of technological enlightenment, what is for the moment unorthodox and unusual stands a good chance of sooner or later being accepted and standard, or even outdated and passé one day. And because legislatures have often been slow to react to changes, it has fallen on the courts to ensure that our legal procedures keep pace with current technology. Very interesting development. Well, now that you can serve divorce papers on Facebook, we think a better use is just to stop by our page, VOA Asia, on Facebook, right after this program, which is now concluding. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling, and our managing editor Diane Gao. I'm Jim Stevenson. We invite you to come right back here again tomorrow for another edition of VOA Global.